I have just arrived in Budapest, Hungary, straight to the studio, and we're live. You've got questions, we've got answers.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, the voice is the same. The location is different. I am in the beautiful city of Budapest, Hungary. Got into my hotel and had literally 30 minutes to rest, turn around and get back here to get set up for the broadcast. But I'm thrilled to be here. We are right now 5 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time. And this Sunday, man, it's sad. It's really sad. It's my favorite Sunday of the year. When you gain an hour in the States, and we get one extra hour, sleep in an hour later, go to sleep an hour later, whatever. It's my favorite Sunday of the year. But they moved the clocks back last week in Hungary. So I'm not going to get to enjoy it this year. But I'm thrilled to be here. Same number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You've got questions, we've got answers. Now, let me give you a heads up as we come your way live from Hungary. I'm alert, I'm sharp, I'm clear-headed, but I'm a little jet-lagged. I flew through the night, I don't know, 15, 16 hours of travel and three different flights, so couldn't sleep straight or anything like that, just a few hours here and there. That means this, that your phone calls are what is going to keep me alive and, well, not alive, focused, lively, sharp, clear-headed. So, you've got questions, we've got answers. 866-348-7884. Any question you want to ask me on any biblically, theologically related subject, anything you want to get back to that we've discussed earlier in the week, I'd love to hear from you today. And maybe I'll get to some e-questions as well. By the way, interesting story. Check this out. We know what happened to the school resource officer, Deputy Fields, Ben Fields, who was fired after forcefully removing a white police officer, after forcefully removing a black student from her desk, and he was fired over this. Now we had one of the liveliest discussions we've had in weeks. Our phones were lit up for two straight hours earlier in the week when we discussed this incident. We got great calls, great feedback from so many of you, different perspectives. And interestingly, we had the last caller at the end of the second hour, himself a police officer, and obviously with all respect to fellow police officers, said it was mishandled, said that it doesn't matter how much time you take, you don't let the thing escalate, even clear the classroom out, get a few other officers in, take that much time, and then obviously afterwards the school can suspend and send a strong message to the students. But here's what's really interesting. The Daily Beast reports students walk out in support of fired deputy. Isn't that interesting? Hundreds of students walked out of Spring Valley High School in Columbia, South Carolina on Friday morning in support of the deputy sheriff who was fired after violently arresting a black student. Students reportedly chanted "Free Fields" in support of Ben Fields. The students walked into the school atrium and then returned to class after administrators addressed them. Here's what's interesting. Looks like, as I'm just looking at this picture, one kid may be Hispanic, dark skin, doesn't look to be African-American. Another kid, African-American. And they're both wearing T-shirts saying "Free Fields." They're standing up for this deputy. Interesting, isn't it? So, I mean, I'm not again justifying the actions of the officer, but saying that obviously students are having a little different perspective on this, maybe recognizing the disruption of what happens in the schools and thinking there needs to be law and order. They want to get an education and not have the disruption. Any case, very interesting. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions, we've got answers. Live from Hungary.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, and then one other detail of importance, that the student that was apprehended by the officer, initially there were reports of no injuries, and now reports that she broke her arm and has rib, back, neck, and shoulder injuries, which certainly would be understandable in light of the way she was handled by the police officer. So there's a GoFundMe page that's started up to raise support for her. So this is not the last we're going to be hearing about this story. 866-34-TRUTH. I thought about not coming your way live. I thought, you know, I'm just going to be in Budapest for maybe an hour or two, get in from the airport and probably be pretty tired, and then radio time. I thought, now, come on, do live radio, have the joy of broadcasting from Budapest. This, I'll tell you a bit more about the church where I am, Faith Church. It is the largest mega church in Europe. It has a membership of 70,000. I believe they have about 5,000 students in school systems in their Christian schools across the country. And really are doing an amazing job in many ways on the front lines of key issues. And I was so blessed by my time here last year and said, absolutely, I would joyfully come back, be with you again. What we've added this year is some seminary lectures. So God willing, Monday and Tuesday, I'll be lecturing at their seminary with maybe 600 students. And then after that, I'll be doing live radio from Hungary. So can't wait to be with you. But we're on right now, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You've got questions, we've got answers. So we will go to Eric in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thanks. It's great to talk to you. So just to give some background before my question, I was reading Genesis 17 the other day, and I was checking in the Hebrew. This is, you know, Abraham, God telling Abraham he's going to have a son, mm-hmm. and then it says Abraham, he left.
Right.
And I saw something in the Hebrew that was really interesting, and so it said, you know, Vayitzchak, and he left. And then, you know, a few verses later, God emphasizes again to Abraham, you're going to have a son, and his name is going to be Yitzchak. And so I thought it was very interesting because we don't see that in English, that sort of wordplay on Isaac's name there. And I was just curious if you had a personal favorite verse in the Hebrew Bible that has some sort of wordplay or just something that really doesn't translate on it into English.
Yeah, and of course, Eric, and I'm so pleased that you're seeing these things. With any language, when you're going from one language to another, you're going to have things that are untranslatable. It's a real stroke of genius when you have someone translating a poem from one language to another and they duplicate the rhyme, because you have to use a little poetic license. You've got to use a little bit different vocabulary to make it work because the languages are different. And Hebrew does not have as many plays on words in terms of rhymes and things like that. You have in the book of Isaiah where instead of there's a cry for mishpat, justice, you have mispach, which is a certain type of violence. But you also have things in the sentence structure that are hard to duplicate. And one of my favorites in that regard is Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. And I'll explain this for my listeners. You may be familiar with this, Eric, but there's something called chiastic structure, C-H-I-A-S-T-I-C. And the Greek letter, which is also spelled C-H-I, is it looks like an X. So when you have something that is chiastic or chiastic structure, what it does is the first word on the first half of the verse equals the last word at the end of the verse, and it kind of goes in reverse order. So Proverbs 10:12 in most of our Bibles would simply say, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers a multitude of sins. And that's an accurate translation. But what's interesting in the Hebrew is that the first word is hatred and the last word is love. So it makes this really, really strong contrast. So if I translate it directly from the Hebrew, sin'ah, hatred, te'orer, midanim, hatred stirs up strifes, va'alkal pisha'im, and over all transgressions, tichaseh, covers ahava, love. So you couldn't, again, translate it directly like that in English, but it's got hatred is the first word, love is the last word. So it's this massive contrast, and it's underscored greatly. And then you have the verb is the second thing, and then what it causes is the third thing. So now you go in reverse. What it causes comes first, then the verb, then the noun. So that's one of my favorite examples there. There's also something that I hadn't noticed as clearly before, but in the book of Job, and again, I couldn't figure out as I've been translating it a way to convey it, you have verb one after another with a slightly unusual form, just and there's this sense of momentum and power and force that gets drilled home. And I wrestled with, is there any way to convey that in English? And really can't. So anyway, thank you for the question. I do appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, I have a special listener I want to welcome to the Line of Fire. Well, she's not calling in, but to my wonderful bride of almost 40 years. Let's see. Right now in Hungary, it is 7:12 in the evening. So all is well. Arrived here safely, got a few hours sleep along the way, and don't have to speak until a little bit later in the day tomorrow. So all is well, all is great in the amazingly beautiful city of Hungary. And if we can only get, hey, maybe we can get our youngest grandchild, Riley, to have the radio on around her so I can give her a shout-out on her 9th birthday. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Craig in King George, Virginia. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
When the father talked about your sister
didn't
get into heaven and the
white. Tell you what, I got to jump in, Craig. There's something wrong with the connection. I don't know if you went on speakerphone or something. Stay right there, okay? And Betsy, as soon as she gets a moment, we'll get right back to you and we'll figure out what's going on with your connection. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Anthony in Washington. Oh, Anthony, we lost you, man. All right, Jay in Fairfax County, Virginia, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Doc Brown. Two questions. I'll put the first one out. That deputy in South Carolina, some of the reports that I have heard about that situation is it does look bad when you see the initial video, but I had heard that student was defiant and violent and struck the deputy somewhere in the body. I don't know if the face or the body. And did you hear that also?
Yeah, well, when I addressed this on the air, this is what I said, that my overall position is neutral, not being there, not knowing everything that happened, but knowing how terrible everything looked on the video. But that, number one, what grieved me was that we did not start. Every parent, everyone addressing the issue didn't start with the extraordinary situation of a student defying a teacher. Now, by the way, it was a black student, it was a black teacher, refusing to put her phone away when the teacher demanded it, then calling an administrator, she still refused, and then when the police officer came in, still refused. That's where we need to start and say that kind of behavior cannot be taking place in our schools. And we need to look at the larger issues of lack of respect for authority. That's where we start. Now, secondly, the sheriff did reference in one video that when the officer then put his hand on the student's arm and to forcefully take her out, that's when she struck him, either punched him in the chest or in the face. Either way, was he justified in doing what he did? Some say, look, once someone resists arrest, you can use whatever force you need to, and it's not going to look good on video. But I did have other law enforcement officers call in, or others who were involved with dealing with difficult situations in school or special needs children or whatever it is, or teenagers, and they said that there were better ways to handle it, that you don't want things to escalate. So one way or another, you work around that. And my other concern was to make this into a race issue. That I felt had no basis in fact. that was pure speculation. And again, as initially a black student with a black teacher, and then you have black students today walking out in support of the white officer. To me, to make it into a race issue was highly unfortunate. And hey, I've now seen two videos of black students throwing, in one case, a white teacher who was trying to take his phone away, and the other case, a white principal who was trying to break up a fight, throwing them over their hips on the floor. So am I now going to say that this is a race issue of blacks attacking whites, or am I just going to say these are volatile situations? Let's not make them more volatile by bringing race into it. Race is a factor sometimes. I just didn't think it was a factor this time. In any case, we'll get back to your other question on the other side of the break. 866-34-TRUTH. Stay right there.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, friends. Live from Hungary, 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown, freshly off the plane in Budapest and broadcasting live. You've got questions, we've got answers. Let's go back to Fairfax County, Virginia. Jay, there was a second question you had.
Yeah, it's completely unrelated. It's in regards to your trip to Hungary. Now, I do have relatives that were in Hungary during World War II, if you get my drift. What is your feeling about being there? Do you feel any ghost or resentment, or do you feel any? Is it eerie to be there in Hungary, knowing that they were part of the Nazi regime?
Well, actually, the church that I'm with here has an extraordinary heart for Israel. They're very influential. They have a membership of 70,000, and they have an almost supernatural connection with Israel. The pastors, others have told me, older family members recounting the story of Jews just disappearing from the streets, that here was a family they knew, and next thing they're gone. So they have painful memories of the Holocaust as well. But when I'm in a church that has such extraordinary support for Israel, they've even had men like Elie Wiesel speak from their pulpit. They have Israeli leaders come and speak for them. One of the messages they've asked me to bring this weekend is on the Jewishness of Jesus. So that's what I'm overwhelmed with when I'm here. And anything beyond that, I'm not conscious of in a deep way. But it's interesting, Jay, when I've ministered in Germany, I've actually felt a deep connection with German Christians there. And of course, they've carried the grief and pain over the actions of their ancestors. And some of them to this day continue to expose things and say, hey, we knew more. We knew better. Let's not just keep silent about this, even though we're talking two generations back now. But I felt sometimes a special sense of solidarity because of a shared painful history. Here in Hungary, it's different just because of the church that I'm working with. So from the moment I'm off the plane, I'm with these other committed believers who have a great heart for Israel and the Jewish people. Hey, thank you for the question, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, before I go back to the phones, let me just give you a neat testimony. When I was here last year, I was asked to bring a message on hypergrace. I was asked to bring a message on another subject. And I was asked to bring a message on homosexuality and what the Bible says and what's happening in our society. And they asked me to speak for almost 2 hours each night, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours. That was their request to speak. And they worshiped for about 2 hours before I started. We probably had in each meeting maybe at least 10,000, maybe 12,000 in the services each gathering. So the message I brought on homosexuality, they aired on national TV during Gay Pride Week here in Budapest. And of course, whatever I speak is going to be spoken with compassion, is going to be spoken with grace, is going to be spoken with truth, is not going to be spoken in any way that is going to incite hatred or demonize a group of people. If you've heard me speak on these things, you know that to be a fact. But the church here owns the fourth largest TV station in the nation, and that TV station is secular, and it's the number one most watched news network, I believe, in the country. So when they air this, it gets to a lot of people, it gets to a lot of people. And they said they got great responses when they aired it for the nation. So, friends, I want you to know, by God's grace, we're making a difference. We're making a difference here around the world. We're making a difference in America, but literally around the world. So I want to thank all of you who stand with us and support us. And I want to encourage you, if you're not part of our support team, become a torchbearer. Sign up today. Put aside $1 a day per month, $30 or more per month. Every month we'll send you a new message. Just preach. This month's message is going to go out on intimacy with God. Every month you have 15%, this is jet lag moment, there's 15% discount on all of our bookstore materials. You get free access to our online classes, the ones we've recorded on video and audio, and I send you a special letter with behind-the-scenes updates, and you get to be part of this work. So to join with us, go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and you can sign up there to join with us. But thank you to all of you, our faithful friends, standing with us on a monthly basis. You're helping us do the work that we're doing. All right, we reconnect to King George, Virginia. Craig, thanks for holding. Welcome back.
Yes, sir. Hey, my question is, the Bible talks about in heaven, he'll lean in with sorrow, and the Lord will wipe away every tear. What happens when you your loved ones, you know, of course, only the Lord knows your heart, but the ones who have passed away or your friends and you have questions about, how does that affect your memory, or how does that kind of get your, how do you not think about that?
Are you talking about us on this side, how we don't think about those that have gone before us, or those who have gone before us?
Yeah, those that have gone before us, when we arrive as Christians into heaven and the Lord's going to, you know, wipe away every tear and there'll be no more sorrow. But what happens, you know, you'll know, you know, your loved one or friends or people,
right,
you know,
Craig, it's a mystery. I've thought about this many times. Let's look at all the different scenarios. You know that you're with the Lord, but other loved ones are not. You remember certain things from your past, but obviously you're not going to have sinful, destructive memories in heaven. So how can there be an environment where there's perfect joy? How can there be an environment when there is perfect joy? There is perfect peace, there is perfect satisfaction, and yet, you know, we can think, man, I blew it back, I could have helped these people and I didn't, or you know, this dear friend refused the Lord and now that one is lost. I don't know how it's going to work, Craig. I think the less information we have, the better, because we'll only get confused if we have more on this side. But I can only say this, the only thing that makes sense to me is if you look at the pattern, say, in the book of Job, okay? When you look at the book of Job, God never answers the questions about justice. God never explains to Job what happened behind the scenes and the activity of the adversary and so on. But Job, having encountered God and recognizing who he is and his greatness and his wisdom and his power, is totally satisfied, humbles himself, and now says he really knows God. So somehow, it seems that the presence of God, the revelation of God, and the settling of the accounts, there may be some tears initially when we give account to God, but everything being utterly settled in the presence of a perfectly just and good God, there are no more questions and there are no negative memories. Beyond that, how it's going to work, that's a mystery.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the insight.
You bet. And look, how about the question of a man? He's married. His wife dies. 5 years later, he remarries. That wife dies. 10 years later, he marries again. And when he's in the world to come, he's obviously going to have a special closeness, a special relationship of some kind with each of the women, and yet there is no actual marrying or giving in marriage. So how does it work? Don't know. But this much we know. In the presence of God is going to be perfect joy. In the presence of God is... I just a little thought comes to mind about it, and it's overwhelming, brings tears to my eyes, literally. The thought of being in the presence of God where everything's perfect forever. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions, we've got answers. Live from Budapest, Hungary.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions, we've got answers. Coming away live from Budapest, Hungary. Let's go straight back to the phones. Let's see here. We go to Brooklyn. Sonia, thanks for calling the line of fire.
Hi, doctor. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, I am calling on behalf with the handling of that student in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, did they call the child's parents? I didn't hear that, and I have not seen it. I move on to say also that the kids, first of all and foremost, should not have cell phones in the classroom.
Mm.
They are students. They came to learn. So therefore, they should not have to be taken phones in the classroom. And I move on to say, after the child declined from listening to the teacher, why didn't they call the administrative office, leave her in the classroom, and have calling the guards or police or whosoever, and have them stay there with her instead of what that police officer did? And my other point is, I am not in with black, white, or pink. I am just in with people. Mm-hmm. Because to me, looking at it as a mother and a grandmother, it's nothing about color. It's about a child that is unruly and disobedient, did not listen to the teacher, and authority came and did not listen to authority. My point is, the police officer, of course, have handled it really badly. He should not have done that. Firing the police officer, and I'm a black woman, I must tell you that. I'm a black woman. Firing the police officer, that's nonsense. Because he could have been reprimanded in some other way. But taking his job from him because of an unruly child, that is out of the question. He could put him on some whatever. I don't care. But in today's day, to really deprive him of his salary for his family, that is a no-no. And my other point is that I go on. The wisest man that has ever lived, Solomon, says, don't spill the rod and spoil the child. If today we had the opportunity was to say to children, I'm not abusing children, let them know when they are wrong by giving a slap, without a child to take up a telephone and call 911, come get my mom, come get my dad, because they abuse me. The handling of children in this country is way overboard. Children feel more or less that they are the man and woman that is growing themselves. And that is where these things escalated.
Yeah, let me just jump in. Sonia, thanks for weighing in such an articulate way. Number one, I agree with point after point that you made. The presence of cell phones in classrooms or in schools, obviously they're ubiquitous, they're everywhere, but how can we deal with the constant distraction they cause? Yes, the blatant lack of respect for authority. Yes, the police officer overreacting the way he handled things. And yes, going too far and firing him. You can make a good case for that. He overreacted. The police overreacted. There's especially with so many students coming out in support of him, this getting escalated to the national level, I think, is completely out of place. And bringing race in, I feel, is out of place. So, again, not to justify the officer, but I think those are very, very wise points. And obviously, we do have ugly situations of abuse where children are beaten by parents and things like that, and that must be addressed. But the idea that there cannot be any type of physical punishment, spanking and things like that, and we got some big problems to address, and we need help within the families to fix them. Thank you for the call.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, just real quickly, appreciated those comments by Sonia. I'm not going to be taking calls primarily on what happened in South Carolina. We did two whole hours on it, and we were all enriched by the calls that came in and the different perspectives that were raised. But we're just focusing on general. You've got questions. We've got answers. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let's go to Rich in Sumner, Iowa. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. About 10 minutes ago, you made the statement, you said, we are making a difference. And I just want to turn that around, and I know you don't want any glory or anything like that. You want it all to go to the Lord, but I got to tell you, you are making a difference. You are doing such incredible work. You are helping me so much in my life. And I'm going to give you an example of that from kind of a strange perspective. Correct me, though, I might say this wrong. A couple weeks ago, I think it was last week, you offered a resource that I think was called the School of Cultural Engagement. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got that. I listened to almost everything now, and I was blown away at the content. Absolutely incredible. I feel like I'm ready to go out and join some kind of cause just based on the content that I got in there. And I think, well, you're preaching about the cause all the time. The cause is right in front of us, the cause of the Lord. And I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciated that resource. It was absolutely incredible. So I sat there and I listened to most of it. And I said, so God, what do you want me to do? And one of the teaching series that really inspired me the most was Frank. I think his name's Frank Turek, and I think he's kind of an apologist.
Yep.
And after listening to him, I said, so God, what do? I really want to engage the culture. And it seemed like the Lord told me, use logic.
Mm.
They're not going to listen to the Bible. Now, I realize you have to use the Bible in order to get them to be convicted of sin to that point. I understand that. But what do you think about this idea that we should really study logic because we can go after the arguments they assert as being ridiculous?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And first, thanks for the kind words, Rich, and I'm thrilled that that resource was a blessing to you. That was the most discounted resource in the history of our ministry, as far as I know. And it was six classes, about 6-7 hours each, that we offered in a summer special summer school at Fire School of Ministry a few years ago. So Joe Dallas, Frank Turek, and others, I had a class as well. And, yeah, the content was terrific. I listened to these guests and these professors and these attorneys lecture, and it was terrific. And Frank Turek is so top-notch. And one of the things Frank does so well is he reasons with people. And, you know, if someone is attacking him and saying, well, what you're saying is not true, and he'll say, is there truth? Is there such a thing as truth? Because people say, you know, got my truth and your truth. Or someone will say to him, well, you know, you're so judgmental. He'll say, well, aren't you judging me for being judgmental? It's just simple things like that to get people thinking, to raise questions. So, yes, God has to open hearts and minds to believe the gospel. Yes, it is supernatural in terms of what the Holy Spirit does. However, he works with our hearts and minds as well. And many times, Rich, what happens is through our reasoning, through our logical presentation, it gets people to stop and think. I've heard from so many Jewish people over the years who've come to faith in Jesus, Yeshua, through our material. It got them thinking. It got them willing to listen to what we had to say. We raised issues in a systematic way. And once that was done, then they were able to open their hearts fully to God and receive the good news of the Messiah. So by all means, plunge into those areas. There can be just kind of abstract philosophical logic. You want to look at it in a practical way. And listen to more Frank Turek stuff. His newest book is called Stealing from God. And I'd recommend that. What he argues is that atheists have to steal from God in order to deny his existence. In other words, when they say there's too much injustice in the world, where do you get the concept of justice from? When you are going to argue on scientific fact, well, how did the universe even begin and various things? So that's a great example of putting that into practice. But Rich, I'm so glad the resource was a blessing to you. And thanks for taking the time to call in, and keep growing in grace and truth. And God will use you to help people come to know the Lord, and also help establish people in their faith. Thank you so much for the call. 866-34-TRUTH, live from Budapest in Hungary. This is Michael Brown. You've got questions. We've got answers. We go to Boston. Jeff, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I got a pretty simple question for you this afternoon, Doctor. So I was reading through Acts with my wife. We picked up a Bible study, and I got to a point where God promises Paul that he's going to protect him. So Paul goes forward safely. He gives him that promise, and it says that Paul doesn't get beat or jailed for 2 years or something like that. It was Acts 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there. And then the very next chapter, Paul is getting beat and thrown in jail, and I'm saying to myself, how is it that God promised Paul that he wasn't going to be beat, that he wasn't going to be jailed, and then 2 years later he does, which made me think, are some of God's promises temporary, and are some of God's promises permanent? And if that's the case, how do I discern what God is telling me, if it's going to be forever or if it's going to be for a period of time?
Yep, it's a fair question. I would say that some promises pertain to certain situations, right? So, for example, let's say I was going over to preach in a volatile part of the world, and I felt the Lord say to me, fear not, no harm will come to you. And then I'm miraculously protected during the trip. I fly back, and then 5 years later, I go to another volatile part of the world, and this time I get beat up and thrown in prison. What did it mean? Well, it meant likely that there was a promise for that one particular time. For example, in Corinth, God tells Paul in Corinth, 1 Corinthians, in Acts, the 18th chapter, he tells him, you're going to be all right here. No one's going to harm you. You know, I've got other people in the city here. And then when it's time to go to Jerusalem, then he's in big trouble. But then when he's almost killed in Jerusalem, God says, don't fear. You testified about me in Jerusalem. You're going to testify about me in Rome. But check this out. This, I think, is the ultimate answer. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul knows he's going to die soon. He knows he's soon going to be martyred. But he says this in verse 16 of 2 Timothy 4, at my first defense, no one came to stand by me, but all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me, so that through me, the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. He knows he's about to die. How was he brought safely into the heavenly kingdom? He was beheaded by Nero. So he's basically saying, up until the time of my martyrdom, every attack, every attempt to take me out prematurely failed. And when it's time to go home, I'm going home. And what I have some promises I believe the Lord gave me about travel and flying and things like that many years ago that I've rested in over the years. But I've also had situations. I remember going to Liberia right in the midst of civil war and then exploded there. And it was very, very dangerous. I was scheduled to go over there and speak. And when I went to pray about it, whether I was to go or not, we had a dear friend and his family, missionaries there. Was I to go or not? I felt the Lord say to me, travel at your own risk. So, and the missionary team said to me, you can definitely get in. We don't know if you can get out. And I knew I couldn't go. It would be foolish to go. God was telling me in advance, you're going into a hellhole, and it's not wise to go in there. So there are general promises God can give us. When he does, I believe he'll give it in a way that we know, hey, this is for life. If I honor him, this is for life. And then there are others that are specific to situations. And we learn that through our relationship with the Lord over a period of time.
Fantastic. Hey, that's exactly what I was looking for. You know, this is actually my second day listening to you and the first radio show I've ever called into in 25 years of existence. So I'm glad I gave you the call, Doctor, and I look forward to hearing the rest of the questions on the air.
Awesome, man. So listening on WEZE in Boston. Jeff, I'm glad that we were the first call you ever made to a radio station. And come on, you got to speak to me in Hungary, so we made it special. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's see. Do I have time? Well, we'll dive in here. Nina, I was going to Points of Rock, Maryland. I want to find out where Points of Rock, Maryland was. Let's go to Staten Island. Frank, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, God bless you, Michael. Safe trip.
Thank you.
Well, two things. What you first just said, you know, Paul going safely into the kingdom. I thought about that verse many times. He really did wind up in the kingdom safely. I mean, he wasn't in the kingdom without his head or with broken legs, you know. But yeah. What I started the call, my original call was about that call that had called back. Basically, he said, you know, how can we be happy in heaven, you know, if we know the person isn't saved or loved one? And you said it was a mystery. God really gives us the answer to that, Michael. I believe it's in Isaiah 65:17.
Stay right there. We'll come back. And by the way, I believe that we'll be satisfied with God's perfect justice. If we know that someone is judged, if someone is lost, that we'll be utterly satisfied with that at that moment. But yeah, the former things, that's what you're going to talk about in Isaiah. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown coming away live from Budapest, Hungary. Frank in Staten Island, back to you. You were going to give us some scriptures.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I was going to state Isaiah 65:17, where the Lord says, I make a new heaven and a new earth, and the former things will not be remembered, nor will they be brought to mind. So I think when people are saved, on this side of the grave, we pine for our, you know, unsaved relatives. But once we're over there, that's not going to be a problem. Even though they're not saved, you know, we're probably not even going to be able to remember it. You know, so that's what I think.
I agree with you. So here's, of course, I agree with you. But is it... When someone doesn't remember something in this world, they have amnesia, they realize they're not remembering. They're like these holes, these blanks, things are not falling into place. Why am I, what do I do? Why do I do it? So obviously that's not going to be the case. We're not going to be walking around like amnesiacs in the world to come. But let's just say that you had three children, right? And one of the children rebelled and died in sin and is lost. And now you're there with your other children. Is there going to be a memory there was another child? And if not, then you have to wipe out large portions of that person's life. And if you recognize there was another child, then you know that child is lost, which you have a sadness. But then, as I said, you could be perfectly satisfied with God's justice and know what he did was right. So in principle, yeah, I totally agree with you. Absolutely. How it works out, that's the part I was saying was a mystery. Hey, Frank, one of these days, as our number one Catholic caller, one of these days when I'm in New York, we'll have to meet face to face, all right?
Absolutely. You know, Michael, for many years, I used to see you on television before I even knew about your your radio show. And I always thought you were so cool. I mean, I said, that guy's cool. And, then when I started listening to your show, I didn't know it was the same person. And then when I started, I said, that's the fella I used to see on TV all the time. But, Michael, if I could just, God has blessed you in such a way, there's many things we don't agree on, but God has blessed you in such a way, and your mental acumen, your energy is just astounding. I'm just a little bit older than you, Michael, and I don't know where you're getting, you got to be getting all this energy from the Holy Spirit. And God bless you, man. I just wish I could do half the things that you do, and the traveling and the shows and the raising a family and writing the books. It's astounding. It really, really is. And I just say, God bless you, man. And I don't know what else to say. It's all God.
Well, hey, Frank, that's very kind of you. And I think it's great that we can have this dialogue as Catholic and evangelical. Very kind words. I appreciate it. Let me just say this, that When I was traveling extensive periods of time and our children were younger, they weren't real, real little, but as they were still younger, that was really to Nancy's credit that she just ran the home. There was a sense of order. There was a sense of everything being taken care of. And many years later, when our daughters were probably in their early 30s, we went out together, just the four of us, Nancy and I and our two daughters, because we don't do that much because of all the sons-in-law and grandkids. And I asked them, did you ever feel deprived? Did you ever feel that you didn't have a dad? They said, oh, no. And a lot of that came from the stability Nancy brought in my absence. And then I've always pushed hard. I go for it. I love to run my race. God's given me grace to produce a lot of things. But now the newfound energy I'm 60 and a half and I can run 20-year-olds into the ground in workouts. It's not just the personality, but also this super healthy eating regimen that I'm on. And it's been, what, about 14, 15 months now. So I'm just thriving. So putting the good fuel in makes a difference, too. So that'll be not my next book, but hopefully one after that. Nancy and I are working on it together. But thank you for the very kind words. I really do appreciate it, Frank. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Justin, thanks for calling up the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Yeah, I don't think you probably remember me, but last time I called, we had a small argument about agnosticism and atheism, and then you gave me the book by Frank Turek, Stealing from God, and I actually finished reading it.
I don't remember all the details of it, but I remember you called, and I remember you said that you would read the book. Yes, so thank you for doing that.
Right, I did read it, and I found it to be a little bit intellectually dishonest in this. Let me explain. So he made the argument for objective morality and, you know, basically insinuating that atheists should not make an argument for having a source of morality, which I understand where he's coming from. But on the flip side, he can't make the claim that our source of morality will come from at least the Judeo-Christian God. If you consider that in the Old Testament, he condones a lot of abhorrent acts. He's talking about slavery, infanticide, misogyny. I mean, the list literally goes on. Frank Turek can only make the claim that God is a source of objective morality if God's idea of morality is whatever he decides is good. So, for instance, if God decides that killing children is okay, then it's only okay if God does it, which is not fair. And so the crux of my point is we can't make the claim that God is our source of objective morality if God does the horrible things he's done in the Old Testament.
Yeah, Justin, that's a terrific point, and it's a well-reasoned point. So here's my response. Number one, if we can look at a larger picture and see that there is a consistent application of justice, fairness, and rightness in what God decreed in the Old Testament, and that you are misreading it, then that would reinforce the point. Now, of course, you differ with that, but that would be the first part. But let's put that aside for one moment, and perhaps, Justin, another day when we're dealing with related issues or, you know, a few weeks from now, you can call in, and we can have a more extended discussion just because I'm almost at the end of the hour here. But
I understand.
What about, but that's a well-argued point. I find validity to it. I have an answer to it. You may not accept my answer, but I find validity to that question. Ultimately, we'd say the fullness of God is expressed through Jesus, but you would say, well, is it contradictory? Is the fullness of God expressed in Jesus different than the fullness of God of the Old Testament, in which case we have a problem? But is there such a thing as morality if we are just the products, the random, freak, accidental products of unguided evolutionary processes and are just material beings? Is there such a thing as objective morality?
There are two schools of thought about that, even in the secular world. There are people who argue that there is objective morality in the context of atheism. And then there are people in the context of atheism that could argue that morality is subjective. I'm going to make the argument that morality is subjective, purely for the simple fact that if you go back in time and look at society and generations, we find out that our tolerance for what it means to for human civil rights.
Justin, tell you what, I'm going to continue this conversation on the other side of the broadcast. My bottom line today, stay with the truth. Truth will outlast all the lies. Truth will triumph in the end. I have just arrived in Budapest, Hungary, straight to the studio, and we're live. You've got questions, we've got answers.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am thriving. I am blessed, full of joy, full of energy here in Budapest, Hungary. Arrived just a few hours ago, went to the hotel literally for a 30-minute nap and headed right over here to Faith Park with Faith Church, the largest megachurch in Europe, membership of 70,000, a tremendous heart for Israel, tremendous heart for social justice, tremendous heart for the lost. I'm blessed and honored to be with them, speaking through the weekend and then lecturing at their seminary, God willing, Monday, Tuesday, and then after lecturing through the day, coming to do radio again, live from Hungary. So your calls are what will drive this hour. You've got questions. We've got answers. 866-348-7884, the number to call. And we have a bit of a family connection, a little bit of a different one that I'll tell you about in a moment, involving my wife, Nancy, and a stepmother from Hungary. 866-34-TRUTH. Any question you have in any area of expertise I have, anything you want to differ with me on, get further clarification on, the phone lines are wide open. All right, the end of last hour, I was dialoguing with Justin from Raleigh, North Carolina. Justin, do you identify as an atheist or an agnostic? Refresh my memory on that.
I used to call myself an agnostic, but I call myself an atheist for the simple fact that it doesn't really matter if it turns out there is a God. As long as we don't have proof for the that there is a God, I don't see the reason to tiptoe on the fence by calling myself an agnostic. I simply identify as an atheist. When you consider that there is no Santa Claus and everyone goes around believing that there is no Santa Claus. Nobody goes around claiming that whether Santa Claus exists or not, they don't know. I don't see the point in applying that same merit towards.
All right. So here, of course, is where I differ with you. Number one, Santa Claus is alleged to do different things and bring gifts in through the chimney. So all you have to do is just watch over the course of a 24-hour period and watch at night and see, in fact, he didn't do that. And the parents put the gifts under the tree, whereas there are documented miracles with no natural explanation. There are scientific questions that have no natural explanation as of yet that, of course, theists always raise. There are testimonies of hundreds of millions of people who can verify their lives being dramatically changed. There are prophecies in Scripture laying out the dispersion of the Jewish people, the regathering, Jerusalem as a center of controversy around the world, things like that, that are inexplicable otherwise. So you've got tons and tons of evidence for the existence of God. It hasn't lined up for you yet. It hasn't fallen into place intellectually, or you haven't had that spiritual experience, or some would say you've resisted it. But to compare that to the Santa Claus thing, I'd say is a completely bogus comparison.
I will grant you that. Maybe to you the Santa Claus comparison was bogus. I mean, I can completely understand where you're coming from. After all, you are the believer, and the strength in which you believe compels you to regard my comparison to be even offensive. I'll grant you that. But in my point is this. If you consider that there are things you don't believe, for instance, you don't believe in Vishnu, the Hindu god, relative to their belief, you are an atheist relative to their belief.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Justin, the early Christians were called atheists by the pagans because they wouldn't acknowledge Caesar as Lord. They wouldn't bow down to that god. I've got an answer. Tell you what, I'll answer that, and then we'll come back to objective morality on the other side.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire. You've got questions, we've got answers. Hey, let me just mention this, as I did in the first hour. Having just arrived in Hungary, my energy level's great, good now, but, you know, be a little jet-lagged. It's a five-hour time differential. It'll be 6 hours as of the weekend. And Friday is driven by you, our callers. So your calls will carry us through this hour gloriously. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. You've got questions, we've got answers. So I'm speaking with Justin, just to continue the conversation another couple of minutes. Justin from Raleigh, appreciate you taking the time to read the Frank Turek book that I sent out, Stealing from God. And what's interesting, I just got a note from a former atheist who was listening to the show. And this former atheist was a staunch atheist and had an encounter with God and changed everything. And the point that this former atheist made was, that's the one thing, when you have that one encounter with God, it's all over, perspective radically changes. And then you know that you know God's reality. And then you have the reality of it in your own experience. And you end up with so many things that happen over a period of years of God's clear work and God's clear hand, that all the evidence points to his reality as well. So otherwise, from the perspective of an atheist, it could seem crazy. I've done my best, Justin. I've never been an atheist, but I've done my best to look at the world through the eyes of an atheist and to talk to former atheists to at least get in your shoes a little bit better. But let's just get back to the one question about objective morality, all right? If we're using the word objective, that means it's not subjective from culture to culture, from person to person. It is steady, it is fixed. And you were saying before the break at the end of the last hour that there are two different schools of thought you were aware among atheists, one which would say there is no objective morality because we're just material beings and the process of the product of random evolutionary processes, and the other does hold to some type of objective morality. Was that where you were going?
Right. So, Derek, absolutely. And for the sake of this conversation, because it will be faster, I'm going to present the side that proposes that morality is purely subjective and relative.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the idea. So during the time of George Washington and the forefathers, majority of the the citizens were Christians and they were slave owners, but in their community, they viewed each other as decent, good human beings. And within that context of that time, they were decent people. Morally speaking, as far as their morality was concerned, they were good, law-abiding citizens. Now, compare that to this era. We obviously know that that practice of that generation was completely abhorrent by our human standards of today's time. So the point I'm trying to make is our morality evolves along with our society. It evolves depending on whatever discourse we have. In fact, we could even move to a future where owning birds in cages could be considered immoral. You know, if you think about it, there is a possible future where that is considered immoral because you're holding a live animal against their own will and you're putting it in a cage, basically a prison. In some cases, you're clipping their wings so that they can't even fly. You're denying them general freedom. You're not even eating them for sustenance. You're just keeping them prisoner. So there is a possible future where decent human beings of this time who own birds in cages can be seen, can be vilified by the simple fact that they own birds in cages. Yeah, this is merely just an explanation, an example to the relative subjective nature of morality.
Yeah, so the first thing would be then, in response, that you'd be confirming Frank Turek's point that you cannot have an objective morality and say that there is an ultimate right and wrong, an ultimate good and bad, if there is no external moral source, some fixed external moral source, hence a God, a creator, a judge. And again, you said that there's another argument against that you could raise, but I appreciate you giving this particular argument, especially in the context of living at radio time. The pushback, I would say, about your point with slavery was that we're not saying that every human being is sensing an objective morality, because we can justify, we can twist things. The Bible says the heart is deceitful among all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? What we do know is that there are plenty of people in, say, American history and British history who were protesting the slave trade, who were saying it's wrong, that there was a constant pushback from the founding of our country when slavery came in sometime after that. There was a constant pushback against it. There was a protest. There were people recognizing it was wrong. There was the pushback for years before that in England, so that you never just had this going on by itself, and then people would still have to justify, well, it's better here than it was in Africa, or we're treating them well, because they were still pushing back against some sense of conscience. That's why I remember in my days doing drugs, the ages of 14 to 16, that I stole money from my father on a number of occasions, to my utter shame that I did that. But that's as far as it went with me. I was talking to one junkie, and he said that guy would steal money from his own grandmother. And I said to him, but you stole money from your mother. He said, yeah, but I'd never steal from my grandmother. So it's in Proverbs, every way of a man is right in his own eyes. So that's the moral battle that we're facing. That's the thing that we're struggling with. But listen, Justin, I've got to run, but I very much appreciate the conversation. And
no,
I'll ask.
You. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll very much ask our listeners to pray for Justin, for God to make himself real in his life. And listen, always glad to talk again and discuss things. By the way, there was a show that we did with atheist Edward Fowles on. Let me just get the details. We called it the Atheist Debate. So if you search lineoffireradio.com for the Atheist Debate, you'll find it. It's Frank Turek, Alex McFarland. I kind of moderated, and Edward Fowles on September 4th, 2013. You might find that enjoyable, but I very much appreciate you taking the time to receive the book and then to read and to call in and interact. And hopefully we'll talk again in the future.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 866-34-TRUTH. If you are a former atheist listening, I'd be curious to know how you came to faith in Jesus. Was it an encounter with God where the Holy Spirit opened your eyes to your guilt and your need for a Savior? Was it a miraculous healing? Was it someone talking about God's creation and raising arguments about his existence that got you thinking and you realized there must be a God? And then you cried out to him? Be curious to know how you came to faith if you're a former atheist. Listen, apologetics has its place. Apologetics does not take the place of the power of the gospel. It's not either or. It's not you can either use reason and intellect or have a power encounter. No, no, no. It'd be both and. But apologetics is often to strengthen those already in the faith. I wrote my 5-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, first and foremost to help other Jewish believers in Jesus Yeshua, to strengthen them in their faith, so that they would not be discouraged or fall away because of the powerful arguments that were being brought by the rabbis and counter-missionaries. Secondly, I wrote it to reach Jewish people with the good news of the Messiah. And here's the process. Apologetics is often a sense of pre-evangelism. Pre-evangelism, meaning that, take the example of C.S. Lewis. He went from being an atheist to a theist by means of intellectual and philosophical argumentation. He became intellectually convinced that there was a God who created the universe and was involved in this world, and then by faith became a follower of Jesus, became born again. I don't mean he just decided to close his eyes and jump. I mean God became real in his life, and he put his trust in the living God. So many times, apologetics functions as what we call pre-evangelism. It is getting someone to the point where they're actually willing to listen to the rest of the message. It's getting them to realize, okay, we don't have an explanation for the origin of the universe, the origin of matter. We don't have an explanation. We don't have an explanation for the origin of life. We don't have an explanation for the existence of DNA, massively detailed programming far more complex than take the 10 most massive computer programs that exist and pile them all together. And this is much more. This is every human being. We don't have an answer for that. And then you look around and think, is this it? We live here a few years. We suffer and die. We're gone. Is this it? So we recognize there must be more, that we recognize unanswered questions. And then someone comes and begins to talk to us about Jesus. And then we see the sin in our own lives. Or maybe there's a supernatural answer to prayer. Something happens and we realize that God is real. But apologetics does have an important role, especially if we put it in its proper context. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, Linda in Belmont, North Carolina, you are first up when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So I'm here in Hungary, Budapest, Hungary. What a beautiful city, historic city, beautiful city. And of course, suffered the ravages of World War II, as so much of Europe did. And my wife, Nancy, her dad remarried after a divorce, and his wife, was second wife then, was from Hungary. So Nancy would often spend time with her sister, with the stepmother, different times of the year or summers or things like that. And she's from Hungary, and Nancy was just reminding me, shot me a note and reminded me about this, that her stepmother Marie said that during World War II she was holding a baby in her arms. And the way she reported it, the baby's head was blown off while in her arms. Now, how she was not killed or injured herself, I don't know. But a lot of people lived through horrors then, and it may have shaped them for life. I talked to a Jewish man after a debate I did in Florida a few years ago. And he told me he went into World War II as a religious Jew and left as a non-practicing Jew. He said, if you saw what I saw. Now, this is a man in his 80s, I guess, at this point when I met him. He said, if you saw what I saw. You couldn't believe in God either. So people go through a lot of hardship, and it impacts them. And our best answers don't answer the deep, agonizing questions they have about human suffering. And that's when we need to pray that God, by His Spirit, would open their hearts, and that somehow this message that God gets involved in human suffering by going to the cross, that God creates a world in which His solution is that He Himself is going to suffer. You think, well, how? That doesn't make sense. But then there's something more. There's a greater picture. There's something beyond. And the price that's paid by humanity and by God Himself is ultimately worth it for the final end of it. And that does become clear when we do encounter God. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions. We've got answers. Let's go to Belmont, North Carolina. Linda, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make one quick comment about the last caller about the objective morality issue.
Yes.
And I think Justin is confusing legal with moral. I mean, there's a lot of things that are legal, like slavery used to be legal, that didn't make it moral. Just like during World War II, what was done to the Jews in Europe was legal, didn't make it moral. Right now, you can go to places where prostitution is legal. Doesn't make it moral. Gambling is legal. Doesn't make it moral. Okay? There's a lot of things that are legal that are not moral. So I think his argument about slavery was just not relevant.
No, well, here was his point, and I appreciate you making that. His point was that the people engaged in it thought they were moral, that you had Christians engaged in the slave trade, and they thought they were being moral, that they were helping these Africans, that they were providing a better environment for them, that somehow their treatment was justifiable. So his point was that we can shift what we believe is right and wrong, so there is no absolute morality. And my point was, yeah, but there was a constant pushback from others saying that it was wrong. But I appreciate the point you're
right,
making.
Well, each person can justify their actions, to try and feel good about what they're doing. Doesn't mean that they are actually being you know, morally
Oh, of course.
Correct.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, the thing that to me is makes it obvious that there is an objective morality is the fact that we do have a conscience.
Yes.
That we know that something is right or wrong. You know, we feel it inside. Otherwise, everybody would be out doing whatever they felt like doing with total disregard to whether they were hurting another person or, you know.
In other words, a lion who kills a gazelle, okay? We've got the wrong continents here. But a lion that kills a gazelle does not have any compunction about it. Like, I left the little babies behind. I broke up a family here just to satisfy. No, because there is no morality in that. When a cat kills a mouse, the cat's not thinking, I'm so big, the mouse is so little, how could I do this? Because there's no morality there. Whereas with human beings, even when we're doing wrong, we try to justify it. Why?
Right.
Why?
Exactly.
And we fight again. We go so far, but then we stop at a certain point.
Right.
Yeah. So I believe absolutely that sense of right and wrong within human beings is a very strong argument for the existence of God.
We each have a conscience. I mean, even the most despicable people, you know, have some sort of conscience, unless they're total sociopath or whatever.
Look, I was just reading an article about a woman, I think 85 years old, just got caught for shoplifting earrings, but she is a notorious and famous serial thief of expensive jewelry. And years ago, when she was young, she would wear these flamboyant outfits and just her behavior. And so she would kind of win these people over and they'd get distracted and they wouldn't notice that she was stealing right from under their noses. But here's what she says. She says, I didn't murder anybody. And she said, I never regretted anything I took, and they could claim insurance and get the money back. So this is her justification, still the fact she's trying to justify it points to it. Hey, we got a break coming up. Was there a question as well?
I just had a question about the fact, the names of people in the Bible, like, for instance, we call Jesus's mother Mary, but in fact, her name originally was Miriam.
Her name was Miriam, absolutely. And what happens
I don't understand why we wouldn't be calling her Miriam.
Yeah. Well, I call her Miriam to remind people of the Jewish roots of the faith. I'll say Miriam, then Mary, so people know what we're talking about. But when we translate the Hebrew Bible, right? We go from Hebrew into English, and hence Miriam in Hebrew comes into English as Miriam. However, when we are using the Greek New Testament, we're going from Greek into English. So Miriam, when it goes into Greek, and then from Latin, and then into English, just as the words develop or the names develop, ends up being Mary. So even if we just went Hebrew, Greek, English, the pronunciation changed. For example, my name, Michael, in Hebrew is Mikhail. So if you're in Russia, remember Mikhail Gorbachev, it sounds much more like the Hebrew. In a Spanish-speaking country, it's Miguel. That's just how it morphed. And here in English, it's Michael. So I think whatever we can do, though, to bring people back to the roots here is very helpful. But that's just how it happens. For example, Yeshayahu is how you say Isaiah. But we don't say Yeshayah or Yeshayahu in English. We say Isaiah because that's the way it comes. Anytime you have a J, a Y at the beginning of a name in Hebrew, like Yoshiah, that comes into English as Josiah. So it's just going from one language to another. That's how it happens. But when we can make the connection, say, hey, Yeshua's mother's name was Miriam, that does underscore his Jewishness. So thank you for the call, Linda. Hey, that ties in perfectly. Last day to order, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the most influential book I've written, translated into more languages than anything I've written, will break your heart with God's purposes for Israel. Open your eyes to what's happened in church history. The book is $15. When you order this week, we pay the postage. You give you free. My DVD is Christianity Jewish. It's a great program to watch. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to the Line of Fire. It's Friday. Everything is the same, but everything is different. Everything the same. You've got questions. We've got answers. Any Bible, theology, Hebrew, Greek, social, moral question you have, anything you want to talk to me about, anything in any area of expertise I have. My joy to take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. What's different is I'm in Budapest, Hungary. And instead of being 3:30 in the afternoon Eastern Standard Time, it's 8:30 in the evening. And I have the joy of ministering at Faith Church, the largest mega church in Europe, membership of 70,000, making a tremendous impact for the gospel in this country of Hungary and in other nations as well, with a supernatural heart connection to Israel that's very, very stirring. 866-348-7884. Just got news from the publisher of my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? It is now being printed in the Indonesian language for distribution in Indonesia only. What a joy to get that word. And I think Hyper Grace just came out in Indonesian as well. We've got a number of other books out there as well. So that's wonderful to hear so many more people that we can reach with this very, very important message. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions. We've got answers. Let's go to Wilmington, Delaware. John, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well, thanks.
I just had a comment and a question. The comment was to the guy about the agnostic. There's a guy named John Lennox. He's an evangelical Oxford mathematician.
He's absolute brilliant. We had him on the air with us, PhD in mathematics, PhD in science, and really loves the Lord from Ireland. Yeah, terrific, terrific guy.
Yeah, his books are great. I just wanted to make a suggestion with those. But then, as I was waiting, I was thinking of a question. We talked last week about church history. I just had a question. How did the terms, like the presbyters and the bishops, how did that turn? I mean, I know it turned over around in history. It changed. But how was it originally meant to be?
Well, what terms are you speaking about?
So, like, the church leaders, elders, the presbyters, the bishops, like, obviously, you know, in history, that changed. But the original, when Paul set that up in Timothy's letters,
yep.
How was it meant to be structured in the church?
Sure. You have certain things that were patterns in the society or patterns in the synagogue that were then carried over into the church. So an elder, presumably, is an older person, more mature, more experienced, more wise, and now an elder in the Lord, and those would have oversight for the sheep. They had to know the word. They had to be apt to teach. They had to be living godly lives. And you would have in your house groups across the city, because remember, they didn't have just a large church building that everyone would meet in once a week in the ancient world, unless you're just in the temple in Jerusalem. But in that case, you were just participating in the larger citywide worship. So you'd have an elder or elders leading a house group, and then you'd have the elders of the city would be the leaders of the church of that city. And then you might have a presiding elder over them. Timothy functioned in that capacity as an elder over the elders of Ephesus. And yet, because he was a younger man, Paul urged him to set an example in 1 Timothy 4:12 to set an example for the other believers in faith and purity and so on. But you didn't necessarily have one pastor who did everything, but you had elders serving together, leading, teaching, helping the people stay away from error, being moral examples, counseling, giving discipline as needed within the body, and ministering to the sick and so on by the Spirit. And then you probably had a leader among them that was the senior among them. And a presbyter and elder, those would pretty much be synonyms. When you get to bishop, that would be an overseer. And that could either be the description of a local elder or someone that presided over the other elders. Now, having said all that, there is not a detailed description of exactly how it's supposed to work. It's more the larger principles. And I believe a key reason is that every society is different. So the structure has to be flexible to serve different societies. I'll explain more.
Fire we please, and the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. To all of my friends in Hungary, look forward to seeing you over this weekend. So I'm scheduled to speak Saturday. That's tomorrow evening service at Faith Church at Faith Park, and then the Sunday service. I believe I bring in one message on radical Islam, understanding radical Islam, and then another message on the Jewishness of Jesus, and then lecturing at the seminary on Monday, Tuesday. But coming your way live, friends, from Hungary today, and then, God willing, Monday and Tuesday before heading back home, 866-34-TRUTH. So just to finish up what I was saying to John in Wilmington, Delaware, there are certainly structures that are wrong, where you have a leader that basically sets themselves up as the mediator between people and God. And when you have a leader making all kinds of outlandish demands on people, or stripping them of their finances for his own prosperity and well-being, or being abusive in leadership, obviously those things are wrong. Being unaccountable, those things are wrong. And yet the specific structure of exactly how a local assembly was to be led, I don't believe it's laid out in detail, but more in principle. So, for example, if you go to a country like Russia, the leadership style they're used to is you kind of rule with an iron hand. That's the national level. It's unlikely you're going to have a team of elders leading a congregation as much as a strong leader with elders working with them. When you go to Israel, you vote for a party, not a person. It's very natural to have a team of elders leading a congregation with a lead elder among them. So different cultures, different application, but the detailed way that we have things where, you know, you've got the pastor, say in Presbyterian church, you might have the pastor, and then you have the board of elders and the board of deacons. It's very practical that it can work well, but that's not necessarily the exact structure that there was in biblical times. The whole Catholic hierarchy and that whole system, that's certainly nothing that would have been known in New Testament times in the church. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Beth, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Jön Kívánó, which is hello in Hungarian.
You know, Hungarian is just a very different language. It's really unrelated to almost every other language on the planet. And I listen to them translating for me. I listen to the words of the songs, and I just can't pick anything up. I mean, it's different.
Well, I have an interesting request, but a quick backstory. I quit college and joined the Army in the 70s, and I was sent to study Hungarian for a year during the Cold War, during the Jesus people.
Wow.
And so I'm studying a communist, well, this was now behind the Iron Curtain. It was occupied communist, and I was studying this language. And the Jesus people are going on, and I just got miraculously and just got saved. Never saw it coming. So that was just a thrill. Changed the whole direction of everything, as every
Incredible.
Salvation does. So now we zoom ahead to 1989. I'm married. I have two children, and I cannot explain to them why I can't stop crying that the wall is coming down. And even now I get choked up just thinking about it, just being, because we didn't just study the language, we were immersed in the culture. And so the significance of that wall coming down to the Hungarian people. Okay, then we zoom ahead to 2000, and I got to go to Hungary, and just a wonderful, wonderful time. And so now, several months ago, or a month, I don't know, weeks ago, I hear the Prime Minister of Hungary announce to the European Union, we cannot take these people in. We are a Christian nation. We want the Syrian Christians. And again, I can't stop crying, because I started out with this country, praying for this country when they were communists. And now their prime minister stands up and says, we are a Christian nation.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary. Obviously, it's primarily Catholic in its orientation, but they have said, as far as the refugees, no, we are not We are not just going to open the doors. We don't believe this is just a legitimate refugee situation. They're saying that the superpowers or other nations knew exactly what was happening, and this is really a new wave of Islamic immigration. And those that are coming in are not looking to become part of the country, part of the culture, work hard, and become good Hungarians. They're basically here to take. This is their perspective, and here to assert their culture. So he's made a strong stand. And from what I understand, that the majority of the people, the great majority of the people, are supportive of the wall that they have put up, the fence, to keep refugees out. Not all refugees, but in this specific instance. Hey, thanks for calling, and what an amazing testimony. God is extraordinary. That also reminds us, you never know what's going to happen. You never know which way history is going to go. Pastor Chandra Nemeth, who leads Faith Church, when he started this church, he was under, the country was under communist rule. He couldn't even leave the country. The secret police would follow them and watch what they were doing. And think of the 70,000-member church right now in that same country. Hey, thank you for calling. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Gary in Winston-Salem. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much for taking my call. I saw you briefly in Haines Mall several years ago with Stu Epperson as he was kicking off Truth Talk Live, and I really appreciate your ministry.
Well, thank you.
I'm thinking about going on a trip to Israel with Greg Laurie in Riverside, California in the spring, and I'm just learning about end times, you know, biblical interpretation and the rapture and whether or not that's actually going to happen and whatnot. And I apologize for not being more educated on your perspective on that. But I do respect your view, and I just wondered if you were familiar with Greg Laurie and his interpretation of the end times and how God is dealing with Israel and maybe true Israel, which are all believers. If it differed much from your perspective, wouldn't happen to be leading a trip to Israel, group trip, would you?
Well, I did with the help of my friend Scott Volk last year, but Scott leads one or two trips every year, and they are super trips. They are wonderful. You've got one of the top tour guides you can have, the places that he gets you in, the experience you have, the uniqueness of it, connecting with Messianic Jews in the land, connecting with believers in need or Israelis in need, those with a heart for reconciliation with Arabs. His trips are terrific. If you go to togetherforisrael.org, Together for Israel, and tell Scott Volk I sent you. And Scott's everybody's best friend, as we say. And he's on the bus with everyone through the day, and so it's a terrific one, and very, very favorably priced as well. As for Greg Laurie, what a great job Greg has done as a soul winner, leading so many people to Jesus and getting people to realize the Bible is true, what the Bible says is accurate. I would fully agree with Greg that God has miraculously brought the Jewish people back to the land. I would fully agree with Greg that God is working actively in Israel today, and Christians need to be standing with Israel. I would differ with his theology about an end-time pre-trib rapture. I don't see that in Scripture, that before a time of tribulation that the church will be pulled out. I believe that we'll be preserved in the midst of. But ultimately, we agree on 99% relevant issues. We would just disagree on a pre-trib rapture and how some of those things work out. So much of a trip to Israel would have a similar emphasis. You'd come away blown away either way. But since you're asking if I'm leading one, check out Scott Volk, togetherforisrael.org. Get on one of his trips, and you'll never regret it, Gary. And when we do lead another one, God willing, we'll do it. I was thinking about this last night, how eager I am to bring a bunch of people to India with me one year. But probably won't get quite as many as would go to Israel, huh? Have you seen my latest video? Have you seen it? No? On Bruce Jenner, Woman of the Year? You say, what? Yeah, well, Glamour magazine named Bruce Jenner, who is still a male, Bruce Jenner as Woman of the Year. So I've got a commentary on that and some other things that are pretty shocking. So go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, click on latest video. Or if you're on YouTube, just search on YouTube, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on YouTube. And you'll see that Bruce Jenner, Woman of the Year. Oh, how about the one right before that? Is zucchini a sexual orientation? What? Yeah. You need to see that one. And how about the one before that? Why Palestinians want to slaughter Jews. That's an eye-opener. And right before that, can the P in LGBTQP stand for parrot? Have you seen the parrot, man? And how about the one on Oprah twisting the scriptures? These are all recent videos, high-quality videos that we've posted. So go to Ask Dr. Brown on YouTube. Again, on YouTube, it's just ASK Dr. Brown. That's where you'll find these. So what's worse? What's worse than Bruce Jenner being named Woman of the Year by Glamour? Another of the Women of the Year is Cecile Richards of Planned Parenthood. By the way, these videos are meant to be shared with others.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Check this out from Toronto, as reported on LifeSiteNews.com. Toronto bans music festival from City Square over Christian songs. The city of Toronto is refusing to grant a Christian group a permit to use a prominent downtown square for its annual musical festival next year because the city has decided that singing the name of Jesus in the public venue contravenes city policy against proselytizing. This group's been using the property since 2006, city property. Wow. Not surprising, unreal, but not surprising. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Vivian in Durham, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I got your book, Your Hands Are Stained with Blood, about the year that you published it. And I am also a Jewish believer in Yeshua. And even though I am ostracized by my community, your book has offered a leg up on people that, you know, aren't so harsh about ostracizing me. And so they've read the book. I let them borrow my book. I made sure they gave it back, of course. And they are now taking a second look as to who Yeshua was historically, and then I think that that opened the door for the Ruach to go in and maybe convert them. Of course, I don't have a dog in that fight. All I can do is be a witness, and that's what I'm doing, and I'm using your book, and I wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you are very, very welcome, and yes, when we open up the horrible truths about church history, and then when we lay out God's purposes for Israel and the Jewishness of the Messiah, it does open up Jewish hearts and minds to the gospel to convert from sin and to become Jewish followers of Jesus, Yeshua. So glad to hear that, Vivian. And yes, we are outside the camp in many ways, Hebrews 13, but we do it joyfully. Hey, Vivian, how about we do this? Stay right there, and Betsy is going to get your name and address. I'm going to send you another copy of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, and the DVD is Christianity Jewish. That's our resource offer this week as a gift so that you'll have a tool to give out. Actually, two tools now. So stay right there, and Betsy's going to get your info. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Durham. Stephen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
I am having trouble, Dr. Brown. I believe you can help me. I go to different churches, and I hear, you know, men and women talk about they call God Daddy, and I don't understand that. They call God Daddy, and they want us to call the Pope Holy Father, and I have trouble with that. Or they say supernatural, and I'm saying supernatural is the power of God. Is God? Are they trying to take the authority or take my thoughts? You know, that is not God or it's not Jesus, but is supernatural or when
Let me weigh in, Stephen, and I appreciate your sensitivity there. First, I will not call the Pope the Holy Father. I would not refer that to a human being. I believe that's out of order and wrong. So
yes, sir.
I wouldn't do that personally. Calling God Daddy, that would be based on the understanding of the Aramaic word Abba. And it says in Romans 8 and Galatians 4 that God has put the spirit of his Son into our hearts, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. Now, technically, Abba, I would say, is halfway between daddy and father. It's a term of absolute intimacy that a child would use for a father, but it's a bit more respectful than daddy. Hence, I say it's in between daddy and father. But I know folks who love the Lord, who are God-fearing people. I mean, they reverence God. And I've prayed with them, and they've wept and said, Daddy, Daddy. And it's absolute intimate speech and closeness, and there's nothing irreverent about it. When we talk about something being supernatural as opposed to saying it's the power of the Spirit, sometimes we're just trying to convey that to people so that they understand that this supernatural realm is God acting naturally, that it's supernatural to us. It's beyond our natural realm, but it's God acting in his realm, and there's a goal of just getting people to understand. So conveying things in the language that we have today, I wouldn't make too much of it unless you find a trivializing of God, a cheapening of God, that would concern me. But otherwise, if it's done in a reverential way, in an honoring way, that wouldn't concern me. But thank you, sir, for asking these questions. All right, friends, just a reminder, you heard about the fruit from Our Hands Are Stained with Blood from someone who got the book when it came out almost 25 years ago. There's a reason it's never gone out of print in almost 25 years. There's a reason. And by God's grace, it continues to be tremendously relevant. I remember when the Chinese translator emailed me and said, I'm translating your book, wailing and screaming. He was so overwhelmed by what he read and so deeply moved with a heart for Israel in the end. So this will open your eyes to things you may never have known about church history and about the Jewish roots of the faith and God's purposes for Israel. And lies in the media, relevant then, relevant now. When you order the book this week, it's only $15, but we're giving you with it a great, effective, edifying, enjoyable tool. It's Christianity Jewish. It's a DVD that we did in our Think It Through TV series that you'll find really enjoyable, fast-moving, great to watch with other believers, great to give to Jewish people who don't believe in Jesus. So when you order the book, we are giving you free with it. The DVD is Christianity Jewish, and we're paying the postage. So to order, call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to askdrbrown.org. And if you appreciate the work we're doing, by God's grace, make an impact not only in America but around the world. Join us. Become one of our torchbearers. You can find out all about that on the website. Click on AskDrBrown.org, donate, and you'll find about all the ways we sow back into you on a monthly basis as well. All right, time for one more call. Sarah in Fort Worth, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. You're a source of biblical guidance in our home. And so we wanted to ask you about, we've been considering Dr. Carson to be a Republican candidate for us, and it brought up the topic of Seventh-day Adventist,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't know much about it before, so we did some internet research, and everything seems to be conflicting. I see good things, like he believes Saturday is the Sabbath, or not he, but Seventh-day Adventist, and the fact that they are always expecting the imminent return of Christ, but then I see other things that are troubling, like some say that they believe in soul sleep, or don't believe in an eternal hell, or also they believe in prophecies or visions of Ellen White, but some say they do, sometimes say they don't, and I just wanted to know.
Yep. I'm going to have to do, Sarah, and I'm glad I can be a source for you. I just looked at the clock here in Budapest, and unfortunately time flies the same way here. I'm only going to be able to give the shortest of answers, but there are Seventh-day Adventists who, as far as the fundamentals of the gospel, believe just as we do and have these other issues. And there are others who are totally legalistic to the point of not even being true believers. I'm going to address that next week. How about we do that? My bottom line today, God is moving, not just in America, but around the world.